Record. This is case number 3160159 regarding a park exclusion. The excluded party is named as Caleb Sims. Are there folks here for that matter? Okay, would all the parties who wish to provide testimony come up to the microphones? I do know that this is the date and time scheduled for this particular hearing. And is Mr. Sims here? Okay. Okay, so are you all representatives from the city, Parks and Recreation?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much for being here. I do note that Mr. Sims is not present. And so I'm going to take a look to see if Mr. Sims was provided with any notice of today's hearing, as it is the date and time scheduled for this hearing. It is about 1:36 in the afternoon on August 9th, 2016. I am going through the file here to see if Mr. Sims was provided with any notice of the hearing. It does look that Exhibit 7 is a notice of the hearing mailed out on Wednesday, July 20th, 2016. It does indicate that hearings begin promptly and that those arriving late may lose the opportunity to present their case or to hear other parties' testimony. I do not see that this notice has been returned as undeliverable. However, I will ask the hearing clerk if Mr. Sims has contacted the hearings office regarding this matter.
He has not contacted our office.
Okay. Because Mr. Sims has not contacted the office to request that this hearing has been rescheduled and that there's no evidence that this notice hasn't been properly provided to Mr. Sims, I do find that Mr. Sims has been provided with adequate notice of today's hearing and will now proceed. So, what's going on with the audience? Are you going to call any witnesses? I just want to make sure that I have an understanding of what evidence you intend to provide.
Yes, I'm representing the city, and the other people in attendance are witnesses to the event.
Okay, yeah. And can I get your name and spell it?
Yes, Maximo Behrens, M-A-X-I-M-O, last name Behrens, B-E-H-R-E-N-S.
Okay, and your title?
I'm the center director of the Matt Dishman Community Center.
Okay, director. And the Matt Dishman Community Center is a part of which city bureau?
It's with Portland Parks and Recreation.
Okay. Thank you very much for doing that for me. Mm-hmm. What I want to do is take a quick look at something. Okay, so there are, in looking at a copy of the exclusion, and at this time, I am going to admit everything that's in the file, which is a copy or exhibits 1 through and including 9. There's not much here. You should have received a copy of whatever we received from the appellant. Is that correct?
I believe I have everything.
Okay, that little statement on the appeal request form.
I'm not sure.
What I have from, let me ask the clerk. Real quick, so what I'm referring to is all I have from that's from the appellant, Mr. Sims, is he filled out a notice of a appeal hearing, and there's a little paragraph that he typed up and included in his, it's marked as Exhibit 1. Does that happen to say Exhibit 1 on the bottom right-hand corner?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great. I just want to make sure you have what Mr. Sims submitted. Okay. Okay. So I see here on this exclusion that there are multiple bases for why Mr. Sims was excluded. I'll leave it up to you as far as how you'd like to tell your story as far as the evidence. For me, if you'd like, one thing you could do is kind of indicate if the facts show all three of the violations occur, you don't need to repeat the same facts. But if it works out better for you to go one by one, you can do that as well. So however you'd like to proceed.
Okay. Well,
are you going to be providing testimony first?
I'll be just providing oversight, but I'll be calling the witnesses.
Okay.
Yeah, who are directly involved, yeah.
Okay. So how about this? Let me place you under oath, and then I'll continue if you have any additional information to submit at that time.
Okay.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give shall be the truth?
Yes.
Okay, and your identification for the record?
Maximo Behrens.
Okay, and your mailing address?
It's 77 Northeast Knott Street, Portland, Oregon, 97212.
Great. Okay. Please go ahead, and if you have an opening statement, you can give it. I'm not requiring it, or go ahead and call your first witness.
Okay. On the 12th of July at approximately 2:30 p.m., I was summoned by center staff who were dealing with a situation regarding Caleb Sims that was taking place in our pool area of our community center. At the time that I was called into that situation, there was an exclusion that had been written up and had been issued to Mr. Sims, at which time he was not leaving the center. He was not accepting the exclusion order, and he was not vacating the premises. And that police were being called at the time as a result of a trespassing order. And as a result of exclusions that had been written for offensive physical contact, disorderly conduct, and failure to obey a parks officer. And so at that time, I came into the situation to work with center staff and the police. So we have with us right now center staff who observed the initial incidents, were part of the initial incidents, and worked with this situation from the beginning through the conclusion.
Okay. And I just want to be clear as far as referencing the exclusion. So I want to make sure that when you reference the exclusion, we're talking about this one that was issued on July 12th. And the reason why I bring that up is the box is checked that this was issued as a 90-day exclusion because this person has been excluded from any park in the last 2 years.
Correct.
Was Mr. Sims excluded from this particular pool or recreation center in the past 2 years, or was it a different one?
It was the Matt Dishman Community Center within the last 2 years, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you know when that exclusion was issued?
The exclusion was issued in June.
The prior exclusion,
the prior exclusion, the 30-day exclusion was issued in June, and there was appeal to that exclusion that was heard, and it was upheld just a few weeks ago, so.
Okay.
This would be the second step in a 90-day exclusion for a similar offense within the 2 years.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So at this time, I guess to take us back to the beginning of this situation, we'd like to call Matt Dishman Community Center staff person Kimara Reese, who was the initial observer and respondent to this situation.
Okay, Ms. Reese. Thank you very much for taking the time to be here. I'm going to place you under oath. Please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give shall be the truth?
Yes.
Thank you. Please state your name and spell it for the record.
Kimara Reese, K-E-Y-M-A-I-R-A-R-E-E-S-E.
Okay, and your title?
CAM counselor.
So what happened that day with Mr. Sims?
So we went to the center from Dawson, where camp is held, to have free swim, which we do every Tuesday and Friday. And we were in there, and the kids under 48 inches have to stay in the shallow end. So I was over there with them when I seen him sitting in the wheelchair with the 2x5 swimming mat on his lap holding it. And I was wondering if he was going to get in the pool with it. And he did. And when he came to the shallow end with the swimming board, he had about 6 kids in front of the mat trying to swim from in front of it. And I was telling him there was kids in front of the mat, but he wasn't listening to me. And he kept going, hitting the kids in front of him.
I'm sorry, and I'm not familiar with the mat that you are referring to. Could you just explain to me what that is? Or
It's like a swimming mat. It's like this big, about the table.
Okay.
And he was swimming with it, and he knocked about 6 kids in front of him with the mat, and then he started to swim to the other side of the pool when he came back and hit another kid and then kicked the kid in the face. And that's when I went to confront him about being more careful when he wasn't really trying to hear what I was saying. Another counselor came to step in, and he got aggressive. And then that's when one of the counselors went to go get higher management.
Okay, so for you, what did you see Mr. Sims doing that was aggressive?
He was swimming with the mat, knocking kids, not really paying attention to his, like,
surroundings. Oh, and I'm sorry, I mean, in regards to when the other counselor came in.
Oh, he was telling him, like, you need to get out my face before he gets aggressive, where he puts his hands on him.
Okay, so he just said, you need to get out of my face in an aggressive manner?
Yeah, like, before I put my hands on you.
Okay. And who was he talking to?
His name is Terrell.
Is he testifying today?
Not today, no.
How do you spell Terrell?
T-E-R-A-E-L, I believe.
T-E-R-A-E-L?
Mm-hmm.
T-E-R-A. And the last name?
I'm not sure.
Do you know the last name?
I don't know. No.
Okay. But what's his title there?
Camp counselor.
Okay. Okay. And then what happened? Was that the extent of what you saw?
Yeah, and then we just started to move the kids from out of the pool.
So when he was hitting the kids with the mat, was he, like, lifting up the mat to strike them? Or
no.
Could you explain that further?
He was holding the front of the mat, like, kicking with it, as if it was a small kicking board. And, like, it was just hitting them with it. And because it was so long, the kids couldn't swim from around it, so they had to go under it and get under it that way. But, like, the front of the mat was hitting them because they're smaller.
And how old are these children?
Anywhere from 5 to 10. It's free swim, so it's camp, the camp kids, and also kids from the neighborhood, whoever came in to participate.
Okay. Is he allowed to use that mat in that area?
I'm unsure. I don't believe he should be able to.
Okay. Anything further?
No.
Any questions?
None for this witness.
Yeah. Okay. And any follow-up in regards to some of the questions that I posed?
Just in clarification, so there was repeated times where he would hit other pool participants with that
yes,
mat?
Yes, it was so about 3 times before he kicked off and kicked the younger kid in the face. Because he swam back and forth from the shallow end to the deep end several times.
And what did the child or the youth do when he was struck by Mr. Sims?
He had, like, this Olympic gear over his head to cover his ears, and it was slipping in front of his face at the time, so he really didn't even see it. He just kind of was blindsided by it, and then...
The child?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and then I just helped him pick it up off his face and get his goggles, and he kind of just shook it off because he's only 5.
Okay.
And did Mr. Sims say anything to you directly when you talked to him?
Yeah.
About
he
safety?
Told me that the child needed to watch where he was going. It wasn't his fault.
And did Mr. Sims have any aggressive behavioral words towards you directly?
Yeah, he did. He called me out my name several times while he was talking to the aggressively to the male Terrell counselor.
What exactly did he say?
He called me a bitch.
And do you remember the statement he made?
Not word by word.
Or the context?
He was just like, something, no, tell that bitch something. She don't need to talk to me, or, you know. He didn't feel in the wrong for his actions.
Okay.
And this was while his words were heard by other camp staff or participants?
Yeah.
And other patrons as well?
Yes.
Okay. Was he speaking loudly, or how would you describe his volume or tone?
Yeah, it was loud enough for the people in the pool area to hear him.
Would you describe it as, did he have a raised voice?
Yeah.
Okay.
Great, that's all the questions I have for this witness.
Okay, thank you. Do you expect that to be the entirety of her testimony?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So you are excused?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Mr. Behrens.
Next, we would like to call Duval Rutherford, who was a staff person on site who was contacted when this initial incident was happening, who also stepped in to try to assist with a specific situation.
Okay. Please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give shall be the truth?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Please state and spell your name.
Duval Rutherford, Duvar, last name Rutherford.
Okay, and what is your title?
Team Force Counselor, or Team Force Staff.
Okay, what happened that day with Mr. Sims?
Well, I was on my way to the front to like get some water or something, and as I was approaching the water fountain, I was approached by one of the day camp counselors, Tasha. I'm not sure of her last name, and she told me that they needed help with a guest because he was talking to some of our female counselors in a vulgar manner, calling them bitches, and then also he was aggressively coming at one of the male counselors and trying to fight him, and so at that and she didn't feel comfortable trying to like kick him out. So at that point, I went and I got one of my supervisors and managers, Dorsey. From aquatics and from the office to come and approach Caleb with myself so that we can make sure that the situation is handled appropriately and that nothing that I said or that Dorsey said would be taken out of context or anything of that nature. As we approached the swimming pool on the swim deck, at that point, the camp counselors and the kids were away from Caleb, and Caleb was sort of in a deeper area of the pool, and Dorsey had started to call him over, but before he came over, he was like already knew what was going to happen or what the subject was about, so he was refusing to come over. Dorsey had called him twice and he was still refusing to come over, at which point Dorsey said, if you refuse to come over here again, then we'll have to exclude you from the center, at which point he still hesitated before he came over. And at which point I stepped in, just from having talked to Caleb in different situations prior to this particular situation. And he came over and actually came to the side of the pool so that Dorsey and myself could actually talk with him. At which point I was explaining to him, like, even though I have a good relationship with him or that I have talked with him in the past, that he's not allowed to not come when other staff members are calling him or talking to him, because they're over me. And so at the end of the day, like, his fate kind of lies in their hands. And at which point he started kind of defending the situation. We started talking about, like, are you calling staff members out of their name? And he had an excuse, no, I didn't do that. Well, are you trying to fight someone? No, well, that guy was kind of getting in my face or whatever the case may be. And so it was just like he wasn't really taking responsibility or really, you know, being extreme and cooperative at first at the beginning of the situation. From there, Maximo also came up and we continued the conversation, and then I left, and at that point that's kind of it.
Okay, and did you personally observe his aggressive behavior?
No, ma'am. However, like, while Dorsey and I were talking to him, there were times that he does tend to, like, raise his voice or get a little bit, hot-headed, I guess you would be the term. Not necessarily getting super aggressive, and he was able to kind of catch himself before he got extremely aggressive, but he got really, like, emotional, I guess would be the word you would use, or like into what he was saying.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Behrens, any questions?
Yeah, so Mr. Sims is aware that you're a staff person.
Yes, sir.
And just to confirm, he did not comply when you initially were trying to redirect his behavior or his activity and call him over to you?
Right.
And about how long would you say it took for him to actually become into compliance with that request?
Initially, I believe it was like probably we were out on pool deck a couple minutes to almost 30 minutes before we got him to actually start coming over and having the initial conversation with us. Is that what you were asking?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess another thing is the rationalization that was going on through his head as well is when I was trying to express to him I don't blame anybody because I hadn't seen it. I don't blame anybody for doing anything that I don't directly see. So I said, if you did, I'm not saying you did it, but if you did happen to kick the person in the face, you need to understand that people do pay for the kids to come up and attend these camps, and that if these people are saying stuff to you, it's because they're staff and they're in charge of these guests' children at that time. And his response to that was, well, I pay money to come up here as well. And so it's like that kind of thing where it would be like, oh, there's a lack of remorse or a lack of empathy for what he did, and or a lack of empathy for the fact that we do have adults that are trying to look out for kids. And that kind of thought process, that would be like, oh, okay, so you're not really sure if you feel sorry for what he did or if he even cares about the kids' well-being or the well-being of others at that point around him as well.
Okay.
That's all the questions for this witness.
And Mr. Behrens, I want to clarify here, because I don't know what other witnesses you have yet, but the failure to obey a park officer, is that a violation based upon failure to obey Mr. Rutherford here, or a different particular instruction from a park officer?
Multiple parks officers, including Mr. Rutherford.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything further?
Nothing from this witness.
Okay. Next witness.
The next witness would be the Matt Dishman Community Center pool manager, Madeline Hanlon Austin. who was in the aquatics office at the time and assisted in responding to this particular situation.
Okay. And I'm sorry, I did also want to clarify, is Ms. Dorsey here?
Dorsey Williams is here, yes. Mr. Williams is here, yes.
Okay. I apologize. Yeah. Okay. Please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give shall be the truth?
I do.
Thank you. Please state and spell your name for the record.
Madeline Hanlon Austin, M-A-D-E-L-E-I-N-E. And last name, Hanlon Austin, H-A-N-L-O-N hyphen A-U-S-T-I-N.
Okay, and you were identified as the pool manager?
Yes.
Okay, please explain what you heard or saw that day.
So DeVar came into the aquatics office through the on-deck door and said to us that he needed assistance with getting Caleb Sims out of the pool because he was failing to obey the camp counselor's directive to stop running into children or kicking them in the face, and also that he was refusing to get out of the pool and talk to him, and then that he was just being and that he was also being aggressive towards camp counselor staff, such as calling the female camp counselors bitches, and then also posturing at one of the male counselors when they came over to try and talk to him.
Okay.
DeVar came in and Dorsey went out with him onto the pool deck to try and get Caleb to come to the side of the pool and have a discussion about what was going on. I just want to state that Mr. Sims was in the pool that day because our hot tub was closed, and that's usually where he spends the majority of the time, so he's not usually in the actual pool itself when he's at our facility. But that day, because the hot tub was closed due to like low chlorine levels, he was in the swimming pool. And so the mat that he had is like a flotation device that we offer a lot of our guests to use, and they're allowed to use it in the shallow bay, but he had been going back and forth between the deep end and the shallow bay, and we don't allow people to use them in the shallow bay. So just wanted to clarify.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So then I was in the office and I saw that Dorsey and DeVar were having a hard time getting Caleb to come over and talk to them. So I went up to the front desk and asked them to call police non-emergency since we might need assistance with getting Caleb out of the pool, because we had had the previous exclusion, we had had to call police as well before, and I believe park rangers for assistance with that. So I wanted to get a jump on that, and then I went to Maximo's office and asked him what we should do in this situation, that we were having trouble getting Caleb out of the pool, and would he come and be assistance, and also if we should call the police. Maximo responded, yes, call the police and I will be right there. I went back into the aquatics office on my way, telling the people at the front desk not to call non-emergency, that they didn't have to call, that we would be calling the police. And then I went into the back office and directed Brady Pearson, who is my assistant manager, to start issuing an exclusion, writing the exclusion for failure to obey a parks officer, disorderly conduct, and offensive physical contact. And then I asked my district aquatic coordinator, who is a position above me, to call the police. That's Larissa Doty, and she's not here today, to call the police. And then I observed through the window that Maxima Behrens came out onto the pool deck and was assisting DeVar, Dorsey at that point. Caleb had kind of come over to them on the side of the pool and was talking to them. So.
Okay.
That's all.
Any other questions, Mr. Barron, for your witness?
And so you say that you did observe staff trying to interact with Mr. Sims through the window?
Yes.
And what did you see through that observation?
I just saw that they were motioning him over. They were crouched down on eye level since he was in the pool and he was still kicking on the mat, floating in between the shallow bay and the deep end. And they were just motioning him to come over, and he still wouldn't. He was just talking like this, like looking at them and pointing a lot, gesticulating a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point I did go out onto the pool deck because I noticed that there were a lot of camp counselors around, and I approached one of the camp counselors just to kind of clarify what was going on. And I believe this was before I came to your office. And she was really visibly upset and was like, he's calling us bitches and he's hitting kids and we don't know what to do.
Okay. Who made that statement?
Tori, I can't remember her last name. But she's a camp counselor. T-O-R-I, I believe.
Okay.
That's all the questions we have for this witness.
Okay, thank you. Next witness?
The next witness would be Matt Dishman Community Center Assistant Pool Manager, Brady Pearson, who also worked with this situation and wrote up the exclusion that you see filed.
Okay. Please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give shall be the truth?
I do.
Thank you very much. Please state and spell your name for the record.
Brady Pearson, B-R-A-D-Y-P-E-A-R-S-O-N.
And you're assistant pool manager?
Mm-hmm.
And what did you see or hear that day?
I was in the office as well when Duvar came in to let us know that Caleb was hitting kids, cussing and being aggressive with our camp counselors and refusing to listen to Duvar and the other counselors. And while in the office, Madeline went to speak with Maximo, and I observed Duvar and Torsi attempting to speak to Mr. Sims, crouching on the pool deck trying to talk to him, and he wouldn't come over. So when Madeline returned from Maximo's office, she asked me to write the exclusion, and based off the eyewitnesses from the pool, what they had told us, I wrote the exclusion for offensive physical contact for hitting the kids and kicking kids, and the disorderly conduct for cussing at counselors, getting aggressive with them, and then the failure to follow a parks officer or a directive of a parks officer for not stopping to hit kids, not listening to the camp counselors when they asked him to calm down, and refusing to come over and speak with Dorsey and Duvar.
And I'm sorry, I just wanted to clarify your last statement. You said failure to obey the park officer was based on not stopping his hitting and kicking of kids, as well as?
Not coming over to speak with Dorsey and Devine when they were on the pool deck trying to get him over and talk about the situation.
And the third thing? I believe you mentioned three things.
Yeah, the offensive physical contact for hitting the kids, and the disorderly conduct for being aggressive with camp staff and cussing at our camp counselors.
Okay, I think you mentioned three bases for the failure to obey the park officer. The first one I have was the not stopping hitting the kids, and then you said not coming over to speak to camp counselors, and then the third?
Not coming over to speak with Dorsey and Devar, and then not listening to the camp counselors when they asked him to remove himself from the area with the kids.
Anything further?
Were you on the pool deck at all for this situation?
I was not.
Okay. Did you observe through the window?
Yeah, we have a couple windows facing out towards the pool deck, so I was able to watch through there. I didn't want to go out on the pool deck and insert myself into the situation since Dorsey and Devar were handling it. And I didn't want to add another body to the conversation.
Okay. Anything further, Mr. Behrens?
Nothing further.
Okay. Next witness?
The final witness would be Matt Dishman Community Center Assistant Pool Manager Dorsey Williams.
Please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give shall be the truth?
Yes.
Thank you. Please state and spell your name for the record.
Dorsey Williams, D-O-R-S-E-Y. And then Williams, W-I-L-L-I-A-M-S.
Okay. And please tell me what you observed that day as far as Mr. Sims' behavior.
Yeah. So it first started with Devar coming into the office, and he directed us that Caleb had been hitting little kids and that he had been using offensive language towards the camp staff. So I went with him onto the pool deck to confront Caleb or Mr. Sims on that matter. And it was our intention to just talk to him at first and get information from him. So Caleb was in the middle of our pool, and he had noticed us come towards the edge of the pool, the closest we could get to him without getting into the water. And I had first told, I had shouted towards him that we wanted to talk to him. He heard me, but he didn't come. I asked him again that we want him to come and that we can speak with him. And he heard me that second time and he didn't come. I then told him that as a park officer that I would, that if he didn't come, I would issue an exclusion for him. He didn't come at that time. At that moment, DeVar started to talk to him, just him being in the middle of the pool. And as the conversation kept going, Mr. Sims got closer to the pool edge, but he did not get out of the pool. There we just asked and inquired of Mr. Sims what was going on, what happened, his side of the story. At that moment, at that time, Maximo came out and he asked the same questions, got his side of the story. And I was there for both DeVar and Maximo's questions, and I asked my own questions as well. Then I left that conversation with Caleb and to go talk to the camp counselors. They had already been talked to, and information was already brought to me by Brady. And Brady had issued and wrote the exclusion for Mr. Sims. And so I gave that to Maximo. And at that time, the police had shown up and were talking to Mr. Sims. And there, the police were asking similar questions to the ones that DeVar, me, and Maximo had asked.
Okay, any questions for your witness, Mr. Behrens?
How long would you say that your interaction with this situation took?
It took a good 20 minutes. Mm-hmm.
And as the assistant pool manager, would you say that Mr. Sims' activities made it difficult for lifeguards and other pool staff to be able to effectively perform their work duties?
Absolutely. He wasn't very cooperative. Mm.
And did that create distraction from other activities that were taking place in the pool at that time?
Yeah, so one of the positions that other staff have is lifeguarding, and that distracted the lifeguards for sure. And their job is to watch the pool and making sure everyone else is safe. Mm-hmm.
And part of the lifeguard's duties is to respond to an emergency situation should it arise?
Yes.
And so that could have been impacted?
Absolutely.
I have nothing.
Oh, I was just adding to that question. At that time, there was open swim, which is one of our busiest times of the day. And so the lifeguards have double duty just to watch the pool and pay extra attention.
Mm-hmm. And approximately, if you can give a number, how many total participants would you say were in the pool at this time?
I would say about... Counting the camp that we had there was probably 20 to 25.
Okay.
And one of the questions that I have is you had indicated that Mr. Sims could hear you when he was in the pool asking him to come over. How did you know that he could hear you?
He was motioning to us that and responding to our questions, but he wasn't coming over. We could tell that he was looking at us when I was speaking, and he also told me, "Nah, man, I don't want to do that." And then he started to tell us the situation. He said that those guys are liars. He also said that it wasn't his fault that what was going on.
So was he shouting at you from like the mid in the pool, and you were on the edge of the pool, or how?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Anything else, Mr. Barron?
Nothing further for this witness.
Okay, thank you very much. Next witness?
So that's all the witnesses that we have for today for this case.
If I may, I think it's necessary to have, the first witness come back up, Ms. Reese. I just had a couple of additional questions to be clear. And Ms. Reese, you're still under oath. So I think as far as the information that you testified to, I specifically want to get the instruction or command that you gave to Mr. Sims in regards to when you asked him to stop.
The first time that I noticed he had hit the kids with the mat, I had told him, I said, excuse me, there's kids in front of the mat. But while I was talking to him, he was just looking at me like with a grin, but he wouldn't turn to see the kids in front of the mat. And then I didn't say anything to him following that when he had bumped like several other kids until he had kicked the kid in the face. And that's when I was like, okay, now I really need you to be careful because you just kicked him in his face. And that's when he told me that he needed to watch out and be careful, that he didn't need to watch out for him. And I told him that the children are in the shallow bay being cautious of grown people kicking them in their face.
Okay. Any other commands or directives that you gave to Mr. Sims?
I asked him if he could be careful and to move with the mat.
To move with the mat?
Yeah, like out of the shallow bay.
Okay, you specifically asked him to move out of the shallow bay.
Yeah.
Did you? Okay. And he did not move out of the shallow bay.
Yeah, he was, but he had already been going back and forth, so.
Okay, Mr. Barron, any other follow-up questions?
So you were saying that he did move out of the shallow bay, but then he came back in. He was coming, going back and forth.
He was coming and going as he pleased.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. That's all.
Anything further? Okay. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Okay, Mr. Barron's, do you wish to provide any further testimony or just a statement
just
here?
Just a statement.
Okay.
The city of Portland and Parks and Recreation believe that this exclusion is with just cause. We, with the variety of witnesses here, for all three offenses, with offensive physical conduct, contact, where there was intervention attempted by a parks officer, communicated with him, and it continued on past that communication. Disorderly conduct with language and behavior in a public facility, that was stated by the multiple witnesses, and with the three different situations of with Ms. Reese, Mr. Rutherford, and Mr. Williams of trying to get compliance with Mr. Sims, we find that there was a failure to obey a parks officer in those situations. With our past history with Mr. Sims, where we've made multiple attempts to explain center usage, parks rules, and having actually gone through the enforcement process with him in the past, with those to provide clarity for him to be able to utilize the center as outlined, we find that there was a violation in all three of these codes and statutes and ordinances, which led us to issue this exclusion. And so that is where the city stands.
Okay. Let's see here. Thank you very much for that. I wanted to review the elements of disorderly conduct in the second degree as they're very specific and see if you have any follow-up for me. It states a person commits the crime of disorderly conduct in the second degree if with intent or and I'm paraphrasing here, or recklessly causes public inconvenience, annoyance, or alarm. So we've got, they either intend or they recklessly create the inconvenience, annoyance, or alarm. The person engages in fighting or in violent, tumultuous, or threatening behavior, makes unreasonable noise, disturbs any lawful assembly of persons without lawful authority, and then the other one is creates a hazard or physically offensive condition that the person's not licensed or privileged to do. So there are a couple, the ones that I read off are the scenarios which most likely could apply to this case. Are there particular ones that you felt were specifically violated by his conduct that you'd like me to, that you'd like to emphasize?
I think that it was the intent of his, the volume of his voice, the actual language, word selections that he used. I believe that it also covered public inconvenience, as was stated by the other witnesses, that this was during our open swim time. And so it's a time that the center and pool users were coming in from all over in the public spectrum. And so it did create a public inconvenience for them to have to hear certain language that was said, as well as just the disruption and the volume that was taking place during that activity. And that also would fall under, I believe, unreasonable noise, which was stated as a distraction not only to the work environment to be able to let staff be able to safely conduct their work duties as assigned, but then also created disturbance for the public that came to participate in that activity, both as the campers and the general public, of which it was stated that the age ranges can be as young as 5 that were in the vicinity to be able to hear the activity and the language that was used at that time.
Okay. Other than the volume, so essentially the your statement that he had made unreasonable noise is based upon the volume in which his voice was raised, is that correct?
Correct, and his refusal to, I think this kind of coincides with his unwillingness to look at alternate options to address concerns by obeying the parks officers who were trying to redirect the activity to have a much more focused conversation with him at the time, as an option that was presented to him, which was not taken at the time, and continued on with disorderly conduct, as well as the offensive language that was used in the public setting.
Okay. And thank you very much. In regards to his tumultuous or threatening behavior, I believe one of your witnesses testified that that they didn't observe, but someone had indicated had observed Mr. Sims engage in a fighting stance. Mm-hmm. Could you describe your knowledge or understanding of what his fighting stance looked like?
Yes, well, I believe it was Ms. Reese who stated that she witnessed the interaction herself firsthand of his interaction with the other male counselor that was also in the pool at that time. And she just saw his physical posturing as menacing, and combined with the language and the tone of voice that was using were consistent with the threatening posturing.
Okay, so the posturing, could you describe how his hands were held or what the posture looked like?
Mr. Sims is a tall person. And so even though he had some other physical abilities or inabilities outside of the pool, inside of the pool, he, the way it was described, you know, he was more upright, he had shoulders back, and he was more, you know, onward facing for the engagement confrontation that he was having with the staff, with the raised voice and the language.
Okay. All right, is there anything further?
Nothing further.
Okay. So let me just take a moment here to go over everything and synthesize it. I appreciate your patience. Mm-hmm.
And I guess in, to conclude, finally too, that there were some, as stated in the witness testimony, that there were other camp staff and other center staff that were in attendance for some of these interactions. We currently have our summer program taking place right now as we speak. It's a Monday through Friday program from 8 in the morning till 5 in the evening. And so we actually have trained certified staff that oversee that program. And so in order for us to maintain that program, we have put together the witnesses that you see today to have the most comprehensive testimony and eyewitness statements available on the totality of the situation as we responded to it in a way where we can still maintain service levels of our program that's currently taking place right now.
Yeah. Thank you, and I do appreciate you being here and providing your testimony. Oftentimes the best testimony that a hearings officer can see or hear is coming straight from the person's mouth rather than looking at a piece of paper or hearing it second or third hand. So yes. I appreciate each of you for being here. Okay, so after looking at the law, the applicable city code and Oregon revised statute provisions that apply, and synthesizing and going over my notes here, I find the following. As far as the events that occurred and the circumstances leading up to the issuance of the exclusion, I find each of the witnesses credible. There's been no information contesting the relevance or credibility of the witnesses that the city has been has provided today. So I do find that the testimonies that I've heard today accurately describe the circumstances leading to the issuance of the exclusion to Mr. Sims on July 12th, 2016. So in regards to offensive physical contact and allegation of a violation of City Code 14A40020, this particular provision in my reading indicates, it speaks to that no person shall cause or attempt to cause another person to reasonably fear or apprehend that they will be subjected to any physical contact, either to their person or to something that's in their immediate possession. The way that this particular city code is written, in my interpretation, is that fear has to be in an element of proof, or that the person a person fears that they will be physically contacted or attempted to be physically contacted by the perpetrator. So in this case, I do find that Mr. Sims did touch several children with his board as well as with his legs. Based upon the information that I heard from Ms. Reese, I believe, in regards to what she observed, I apologize, I have a lot of notes here. Ms. Reese testified to observing that Mr. Sims kicked a child and hit another child kicked a kid in the face, and based upon her description on the child not really understanding what was happening, basically he was kind of like startled or surprised as to what happened. I don't think that there is enough evidence in the record to show that there that persons reasonably feared that Mr. Sims was coming after them or that he intentionally made physical contact with them. It seems as though it could be equally on the other side that Mr. Sims, perhaps it was accidental. There's just not enough information for me to find that Mr. Sims in caused or attempted to cause the children to fear that they will be hit by him. So on that particular city code violation, I find that it's more probable than not, based upon the evidence that I've heard and reviewed, that a violation of offensive physical contact did not occur. In regards to a violation of ORS 166025, disorderly conduct in the second degree, this one is also very close, because there has to be intent that the person acted to engage in fighting or violent, tumultuous, or threatening behavior, or make reasonable noise, or recklessly do so. So in that case, recklessly is lower than intent as far as the burden of proof, and the person has to be aware of the risk and then consciously disregards the risk that the result will happen. So basically, would a reasonable person have acted that way in that situation? So in looking at these particular elements, there are various provisions that Mr. Behrens argues as having been violated by Mr. Sims' conduct. So I find that Mr. Sims acted with intent to cause public inconvenience or annoyance based upon his behavior of not following the directions of the park staff, of in continuing to ignore the directions of the public of the park staff. But did he cause that inconvenience or annoyance based upon fighting, tumultuous, or threatening behavior? In reviewing the evidence regarding his stance, considering that this all took place in a pool and there was some evidence of a posturing, that he had his shoulders back, and he, based upon his physical stature, he seemed to appear to pose a physical posture indicating some sort of aggressiveness. I find that there's been some testimony regarding his stance being threatening or tumultuous or suggestive of being violent. However, I don't find that based upon the stance alone, that his stance, that there's enough information that he intended or recklessly had this stance to convey that he was going to be violent or threatening or act out. And in particular, I find that because he was in the pool when much of this happened, part of disorderly conduct, there has to be an immediate threat that this person's going to act violently. So based upon the testimony that I've heard, I don't think that he engaged in fighting, violent, tumultuous, or threatening behavior. As far as making unreasonable noise, this one's a hard one, because the First Amendment is basically attached to what a person says as far as using the vulgar language that he did. Now, I completely agree that calling park staff vulgar names is not appropriate. However, in some ways, it is his, he could do so, and he was exercising his First Amendment right to do so. Based upon using his loud voice, making unreasonable noise. Now, I don't find that, based upon the evidence, that there's enough to find that he made unreasonable noise, in part because of the setting that he was in. It's a pool. It's kind of a loud situation, and based upon his distance from where he was talking to the counselors, it would be expected that he would use a louder voice, not necessarily screaming or yelling, and there hasn't been any testimony that he was screaming or yelling so much to be unreasonable for where he was communicating with the persons. So on that, I do not find that it is more probable than not that Mr. Sims engaged in disorderly conduct in the second degree. In regards to City Code 2012-240, directions of park officers to be obeyed, I do find that it is more probable than not that Mr. Sims engaged in conduct where he did not follow a reasonable park direction of the park officers. I do find that multiple park officers gave him directions to follow in regards to coming over and speaking to the park officers to defuse the situation, as well as Ms. Reese asking Mr. Sims to move over to the shallow area so that he would stop hitting the children or having contact with the children with the board. I do find that the directions that he was given were reasonable directives. They related to the health, weight, welfare, or safety of the pool users, as it was open pool on a busy time of the day. So therefore, I do find that Mr. Sims, it is more probable than not that the evidence shows that Mr. Sims violated City Code 2012-240. Because there were three allegations or three bases of the exclusion, however, only one needs to be proven for the exclusion to be valid, this exclusion is valid. Okay, so it looks like the exclusion was issued on July 12th, 2016, and Mr. Sims filed his appeal on July 14th, 2016. So essentially, I find that Mr. Sims has served about 2 days on the exclusion. There are therefore, because this is a 90-day exclusion, I do also find, based upon Mr. Barron's testimony, that Mr. Sims has been excluded from any park in the last 2 years, as Mr. Barron's testified that Mr. Sims was issued an exclusion that was upheld in June of 2016. Therefore, this is a 90-day exclusion with approximately 88 days left, and I will issue the order that Mr. Sims is required to serve approximately 88 days from an effective date, which will be August 19th, 2016. Okay. Do you have any questions, Mr. Barron's?
No questions. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much to all of you for being here. I will issue that order and send it out accordingly.
Thank you very much.